Welcome to the Healthy Skin Show with Jennifer Fugo, where we're flipping everything you've been told about your chronic skin issues upside down and connecting you with alternative solutions your dermatologist never told you about.
Welcome back to episode number 166 of the Healthy Skin Show. In today's episode, we're going to be diving deeper into this whole conversation around toxic mold exposure. And is it possible that mold could actually increase the body's histamine reaction? My guest today is Dr. Jill Krista. She's a naturopathic doctor, best-selling author, and internationally recognized educator on mold illness. She helps people recover their health after exposed to toxic mold. She's also authored a book called Break the Mold, 5 Tools to Conquer Mold and Take Back Your Health, and provides online training for medical practitioners to help them become mold literate so that they can effectively and efficiently identify and treat their mold sick patients. And I specifically invited Dr. Krista on the show today because I really felt like this conversation around mold needs to be fleshed out further. I don't believe that every single person has a problem with mold. That's an important distinction to make, and it's not the reason that I'm highlighting this here on the Healthy Skin Show so much. But I do think that a lot of chronic illness and a lot of what's let go for many years can be the result of hidden issues that are lurking, unfortunately, in our surroundings. It could be your home. It could be your car. It could be your place of work. Mold is one of those things that you don't necessarily need to see in order for it to be present. So many of my clients have chronic histamine issues that I felt that this conversation was really going to be helpful to those who are really struggling, especially if you're taking any type of antihistamine med on a daily basis just to try to make it through the day. So let's dive in to today's conversation. Thank you so much, Dr. Jill, for being here with us. I'm actually really excited because Dr. Holland had suggested you as a guest, and I've been following your work for some time. And because mold is not my specialty, I sort of feel like that's like a higher scope of practice that a lot of times you should work with a doctor on. I feel really grateful to have you here to share everything you know.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I feel really lucky to have the platform to spread this word about mold.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because like, I remember even 10 years ago, you didn't really hear that much about mold. The topic has grown in popularity. It's almost like maybe a little sexy now in the wellness world.
Sexy mold. Well, if that's the case, I take some personal pride in that because I feel like I've been working really hard to get the message out there. You know, there are a couple of docs that we're really putting ourselves out there and trying to spread the word about mold illness because it is one of those most hidden illnesses. And I really do hope it trends. I hope it does become sexy because then it can start to hit the radar. Yeah, right now it's completely missing. It's missing the radar.
And so why don't you tell us a little bit about why mold is such a problem? Because a lot of times people think they don't see mold, so they don't have mold.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily the case.
That is not necessarily the case. And just because you can't smell mold doesn't mean it's not there too. The mold toxins called mycotoxins, these guys don't have a scent. They're a chemical and they don't trigger anything in our scent system. So you can have mold trapped behind building materials and the spores and fragments are trapped there. But if it's getting all of the water that it needs, and sometimes it just needs humidity, you know, if you've had a water event, that may have been the spurring event, but then having just high humidity in your house could be the thing that continues to feed it. So you can have all of these things happening in your house behind the building material, not see anything. It can be under flooring. It can be in your attic, could be in your crawl space. And
I want to add to that.
That smell. Yeah.
It can be in your front load washer.
Yes. It can be in your refrigerator filter. If anybody's interested, I have a video blog about that. I try to make my video blogs. I have a whole bunch of them out there that are like a minute or less. Because if you have mold, one of the main symptoms is brain fog. So yeah, I have a video blog about that too. So yeah, there can be mold that you don't catch by smelling it. And if you look at the CDC's definition of mold illness, it is things that have to do with interaction with spores. So it's going to be sinusitis, allergies, hay fever, asthma if it's really severe. But that's kind of where they stop with the definition. And I'm on a mission to really expand that definition to the toxins and the chemicals that mold secretes. So these toxins called mycotoxins are designed for that mold to defend its territory. So the very design of these toxins is to kill other living things, mainly microbial, but they do affect human health as well and the pets in that space. And these toxins can go through building material. So if the mold's trapped behind building material, you may not be having any quote unquote mold symptoms because you're not having sinusitis, hay fever, asthma, that kind of thing, but you are going to be getting exposed to the chemicals. And that's where we see, for my personal practice, probably the majority of my patients are dealing with mycotoxin illness and not so much spore allergy type symptoms.
Mm. A quick question for you, and I get this a lot. Why is there a difference, and what would be the difference between mold and say mushrooms, and especially now we have this huge upsurge and seeing of popularity, so to speak, of medicinal mushrooms?
Yeah, they're all in the fungus family. Okay. But the mushrooms and mold that can grow indoor are different. What would that be? Genus? I don't know. The next level down. So they're all fungus. And that's why part of my protocol is to actually take people off fungal things, because when you've been exposed to a water damaged building, the messages in those toxins, what that's communicating to the body is that fungus wants to come and take over your body. So if you add more fungus, like Saccharomyces boulardii is often used for a garden variety candida infection, that works great when it's an acute infection. Like you had some antibiotics, you had a candida overgrowth, and you're just trying to reset a normal flora. But if you're getting exposed every day to these toxins, now the message is that you are not safe and fungus wants to move in. And if you add other fungus, I've just learned from practice that people have more reactions from that.
Mm. Yeah, so it could be the Espelardi. It could even be, oh goodness, lion's mane.
Yep.
It could be any of these that people are marketing as. I think that's an important lesson too. That right, it's sort of the Goldilocks syndrome. We always think more is better, but then we have to take a step back and say, well, is it better for me?
Right.
And maybe I need to find the right amount, and the right amount in this particular moment is none.
Right. And that it's a very important part that I teach it. I have a practitioner course where I train practitioners on how to treat mold illness. It is the last step, what we call mycoremediation in a treatment protocol. When we know the person is out of the mold, they have all the fundamentals in place. We've done repairing their body from the mycotoxin exposure, protecting their cells. We've reset the balance with antifungals. Then the next step, when we know we've kind of won the game, is using medicinal mushrooms to restore the immunity and the immune function, because mold mycotoxins are incredibly immune depleting and suppressive.
Wow, that's really cool to be able to use the different. Wow, that's really neat. So cool. So, and I think that's also helpful to give people hope here if they're struggling with this or they're not sure what to do. So there are practitioners certified in your protocols that can help.
Yeah.
Do you have a directory on your website just in case somebody is looking?
Yes, I have a find a doc page so they can find a practitioner in their area, and it's listed by region. So you can go to whatever country you're in first, then whatever state or province you're in, and then find your city.
Perfect. Yeah. So I have a few questions for you, because I feel like this is, we talk a lot about the connection between skin issues and gut issues. And, you know, I think a lot of times in the functional integrative world, everybody just goes, oh, you got to heal leaky gut. Well, that's great. But there's so many, like for me, I'm like, we have to find the triggers that are causing the problem first.
Exactly.
And one really eye-opening post that you shared was about this substance called MPA and how it relates to the gut. Could you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yes. MPA is mycophenolic acid. It's made by a few different species of indoor toxic mold, Aspergillus and Penicillium. And when we were talking about, you know, the mycotoxins, those are made defensively. So they're going to be made more like a bomb by the mold if it has something else. But basically, I think of it as it found waterfront property and wants to defend itself. But when mold is happy and it's not trying to defend itself, it spits out this chemical. It spits out these kind of, I jokingly in the post call them mold farts, because it's just happily metabolizing and eating and doing what it's put on the planet to do, which is to break down dead material and make it into nutrients. And normally in nature, there are things that come along like insects and other things that come and eat those nutrients, and everything stays in a harmonious balance. You bring it into an indoor environment and this mold is able to just metabolize and, you know, off gas basically, and it's products of metabolism. Unfortunately, that MPA also can go through building material. It can also greatly affect human health, and so much so and so reliably so, it's actually been made into a pharmaceutical drug to prevent organ rejection and for people with autoimmune disease gone crazy. It's called CellCept. So yeah, you could be basically giving yourself a pharmaceutical immune suppressive just by breathing your indoor toxic air. Isn't that wild?
That is really wild.
And we know that this one in particular is, it just wrecks the gut. This mycophenolic acid, we know that it's really readily absorbed. So it goes in very quickly and it will cause destruction of the enterocytes, which is the lining, the cell lining the gut.
And so this is why it's like, no bone broth is going to fix that.
Yeah, exactly. No air filter is going to keep up with it either.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the other question I get a lot is, well, do we have to remediate or can we just run some really good air filters? And I can tell you that, you know, an inch square of mold that you can see is over a million spores. A million spores. So,
oh my gosh.
And that's just a single layer. So they often grow in 3D, of course. So that's balloons full of toxic gases that are made over a 24-hour period. No air filter is going to keep up with that.
No, no. And the other issue, too, is that a lot of times I have worked with a lot of people who have histamine issues. Mm. And so mold can be connected to histamine issues. Obviously, let's say you're in this environment where you have this MPA and this is increasing the permeability of your gut, right? Making it leakier. Now, all of a sudden, you have all these, oh goodness, you've got all these flare-ups of hives. And when you sweat, you're just becoming incredibly itchy and like everything's driving you nuts. And some people even live in humid environments, which I'm sure doesn't help matters.
Doesn't help, right.
How is it that mold is related to histamine-type reactions?
So first is the mold spore. The spores are allergenic. So they're going to upregulate how many mast cells you have floating around in your body. They're going to upregulate, and when I say mast cell, that is the cell that secretes or makes histamine. So now you have just more cells that can make histamine. But there's also the mycotoxins and those chemicals that we're talking about. Those are fat soluble, and we can absorb them more readily through the skin than any other way of getting them in, including breathing and eating. So our skin is, as you know, incredibly absorptive surface and also a layer of fat. So that's where these things can accumulate on the skin. And for different people, that's going to express in different ways. For people who already are being exposed to the spores and they're having that allergic tendency and the upregulation of total number of mast cells that can make histamine, they're going to have more of the inflammatory histamine type reactions. For people that their reaction is more increased aging, it's sort of like your Ayurvedic dosha, you know, which way are you going to go? Are you going to be an excess inflammatory person? Or are you going to be like a aged, wrinkled, age spot person, you know? Or are you going to be somebody who starts to get scarring types of eczema or scarring types of psoriasis? So, you know, there's all these different expressions with the same cause. And that's why it's so hard to figure out mold. Mm-hmm. So with the histamine thing, we also are seeing that mold mycotoxins do this particular thing with a gene that can change how much a mast cell can spit out histamine. And so you basically are just becoming like a histamine factory, and it will change where in the body these mast cells go. So mast cells don't decide what they're going to do until they get to the tissue that they're supposed to get in. And I heard your interview with Dr. Heather Zwicky, and she had referenced like she has these two hives on her hand, and that, you know, like the why or where, we don't know. It could be because you had an old injury somewhere that's going to send more of those cells. But there is a direct correlation between a mold and mycotoxin exposure and people with increased histamine reactions. We actually see that people that were going along fine in their life and suddenly develop a pollen allergy or a food allergy or a grass allergy or a dog allergy, and they've had dogs all their life, that usually is something has happened to their body. And so it could be something more gut destroying like glyphosate or pesticides. It could be an acute exposure, but we often see a new onset allergy of any of those kinds I just mentioned having to do with exposure to a water damaged building, either through their work or their home.
And so that's where it gets complicated here. Yeah. So if somebody is listening to this and like, obviously they may be at the beginning of their journey. You mentioned, I saw on your website, you had this discussion, little video, I should say, about nettles, which I love nettles because they have great antihistamine properties to them. Mm-hmm. Would nettles be, nettles, by the way, for anybody who's like, nettles, what the heck is that? That's an herb. A weed? Yeah, a lot of people think of it as a weed. Yeah. Why would nettles be a good option for somebody, or would it be for someone in this particular situation?
It's fantastic for this, because when you do get the leaky gut and increased histamine, you also have absorptive issues with minerals. And nettles hits all those points. It's very high in minerals. It's a deep, deep green. So you could consider it one of your green vegetables. In the spring, spring and fall, kind of the two times where nettles like to pop up, I'll actually use this as a sauteed green, like instead of spinach or instead of chard. So it's high in minerals, high in the deep green color, so folic and folinic acid. It has anti-inflammatory and antihistamine effects, which is, there's your bing. And I've had people say, I have a recipe out there on my website about how to make nettles lemonade. It's a DIY and it's wonderful. So you basically make nettles tea really, 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 you steep it and make it really strong and then mix it half and half with lemonade. So it's like an Arnold Palmer, but you're using nettles instead of iced tea. And it tastes wonderful. And it's amazing for chilling out mosquito itches, eczema itches. It's just like one of those itch calmers because it hits on all those levels. A lot of people with allergies are running low on minerals as well. All of these little trace minerals that help to re-regulate an inflammatory response. So nettles hits all those parts.
And for someone who doesn't have access to fresh nettles, or they're like, I don't know what that is, I'm not going to go find that.
Yeah.
There's teas, there's capsules. Like, what do you suggest? Like, what would that person do? Is like a nettle tea enough, or are you looking for a certain concentration initially?
It is different for everybody. I've had people come to visit my house and we're sitting outside and have a mosquito bite, or I've had, you know, people have hive reactions or whatever. They have one glass of this nettles lemonade and things calm down. So I think that they're definitely, with nettles, it's the more inflamed you are, the bigger the dose you're going to need. And they're very safe to use. They're a food. So like I said, I can eat, and I think if someone wants to go see the video, like the amount of nettles I have in my hand, I could eat that at one sitting, and often do, and they're wonderful. And it's safe. It doesn't cause any problems with me. It's not like kidney damage or anything like that. They're super safe. So I think that you start, this very naturopathic, start at the lowest amount. So if you... Mm-hmm. Nine capsules, start at one capsule. That's usually 500 milligrams of nettles. Or you can buy it in bulk from like Frontier Herbs. If you're finding it's really working for you, you can get it in bulk in a dried, cut and sifted way. And then you can use that in tea and make your own tea bags, or, you know, however you want to use it. It's just so easy. And you can bathe yourself in it.
Yeah, so first of all, I want to say I'm going to link in the show notes to that recipe so that people can easily find that on your website. But then let's talk about that. You mentioned, so I'm curious about this, plus we'll have to circle back about the calendula you mentioned. So talk to us about the baths.
Yeah, so I often will use nettles with calendula. And the one thing nettles doesn't have is it's not antifungal. It doesn't have a real strong antifungal activity. It's going to be antifungal by nourishment, but not Not really. So nettles will help calm itch and histamine, and the calendula calms those two. It's anti-inflammatory, but it's also antifungal. And so often for children, we're dipping them into bath teas. So we just make these very strong teas. And again, if you buy it from like a in bulk, cut and sifted from like a Frontier, it makes it very affordable. So you're not going broke trying to, you know, skimp on a bath or whatever. And you just get the bath, but you make strong tea and you can dump those into a bath water and soak. And it is amazing. Or if you have a problem area, you can make that into just a bowl and take a compress and soak that compress and wring it out and then put it over your affected area. And I love what you always say, like, it's more than what you put on your skin. You have to treat your body, that kind of thing. But sometimes you also need to treat topically, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't just ignore. I think that's my big grievance, at least with just my experience with being having eczema and going to a dermatologist, was it just was the outside. Like, here's a cream. Here's a cream. And I realized that it's both the outside and the inside. And if we were to approach it more from that perspective, probably we'd have way fewer people suffering the way that we do now in this day and age, which is frankly really sad and surprising given all of our medical advancements in science and all the research we have and all the wisdom that we have from so many different modalities as well. And yet here we are with people who have like peeling skin, their babies are crying in horrific pain, and everyone's like, well, I don't know what to tell you. You're just going to have to learn how to manage this. And I'm like, that's not an acceptable answer.
No, not at all.
So I wanted to ask you about, for those people who are really struggling right now, where like maybe say they even go outside and it's just those mast cells become really destabilized. So they're in a sweaty environment, they're having this issue. And there's a lot of talk about using like binders and glutathione and whatnot. Do you have any thoughts that you'd like to share on is that helpful? Is it not? Because you know, you hear one person and then you listen to other people and everybody's got a different opinion on that.
Yeah, I do have a lot of thoughts about that. But I think really having people understand where I'm coming from, that I'm coming from my experience trained as a naturopathic doctor with a naturopathic view on things, which is very holistic and with a certain selection bias of the type of people who are going to come see me. I'm not getting the people that want just the cream. You know, I'm getting people that want to get to the root cause. So I'm very lucky that way. And so my view on things is colored by my experience. And I think also a nice thing about when there are lots of different ways to do something, that means there's no one perfect way. You know, like my way is an approach, but there, it may not work for everybody. And so do investigate different ways to do this so that you're finding the thing that gets you to the end goal the fastest. For me, binders aren't the end all be all part of a treatment. That's a Shoemaker protocol kind of approach. But when you treat more holistically, you know, we're doing, I have five steps I have in my book, five tools. It's first one is avoidance. Second is fundamentals. Then there's repair, protect, and fight. And so the idea there is avoidance is the most important step, is you have to get out of that mold exposure. Just doing that is 50% of the time is effective. People's bodies detoxify, they eat the right food, they've got everything dialed in. That is not the case for the other 50% who need to go through the rest of the tools. And the fundamentals, that next step, sometimes that's the thing then that cures the person. And that has to do with, you know, eating the right diet, things you shouldn't eat if you're mold sick, as a therapeutic diet, not a lifelong diet. And then things like getting on a circadian rhythm, getting movement, getting exercise, and the nutrients that I find most important for mold sick people that they're deficient in is essential fatty acids and all the good fats. And it makes sense because if this is a fat soluble toxin and you don't have good fats, you have like hardened fats, it's going to lock those toxins in. So I have my little rhyme I got from my teacher, which is the solution to pollution is dilution. And so if you're diluting a fat-soluble toxin, you need copious, clean, correct fats. So making sure you have a diet high in good fats and supplement if you can't do that to really dilute out those fats. And then that's where binders come in, because that the idea of the fats is that it's moving things through the bile, and bile is where we detoxify fat-soluble toxins, and binders bind the bile. if it's a water damage building exposure. Now, if you're eating moldy food, that's a different deal. You might need certain, Dr. Neil Nathan's doing some incredible work right now, like this binder for this mycotoxin and this, but for the general, you know, mold sick person from a water damage building, making sure you're moving the bile, a lot of people can't do that. Yeah. And then making sure that you're grabbing as much bile in the gut as possible. And you can do that through food. There, an insoluble fiber of any kind can grab that bile and carry it out. And then you have to make new clean bile with all those good fats that you just ate. And so the second nutrient would be bioflavonoids, colorful veggies. You can't go wrong with vegetables.
No, you can't. No, you cannot. I love that. I mean, yeah. It's great that that you have this great book that offers people that it's, I guess, they may need help, right? At a certain mm-hmm. point, you may need more deeper help, but at least it's an initial first step of saying, okay, let me start identifying issues and then dealing with it. And I like the approach. I mean, I think it's great to do food first when you can. Sometimes you need more help.
Yeah, absolutely. And
that's okay. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to mold, I think that's where, and I just want to reiterate this again, because I think that people need to hear this. There's a lot of people in the health world now that somehow pop up and they're an expert in something. I, as a clinical nutritionist, I feel like there are certain limitations on a scope of practice for like anyone in the nutrition profession. And I just think that's my opinion. I think mold is something, if you're going to work with somebody, you're going to go to a physician and work with them on that.
Yeah. And that's the ideal thing. What I found and why I wrote my book is that there just weren't mold literate doctors out there. And I thought to myself, oh, I'm in my little bubble and my little world, naturopathic doctors knew this is what I did, but that doesn't help anybody. And then when we had mold in my own house and I was like, oh, it's mold. We do this and we do this and we do, you know, I kind of had the protocol. That's when I felt very duty bound to write a book. So the book, you know, we were talking about the steps. If you've done avoidance and you've done the fundamentals and you're still not better, that's where the meat of the book is how do I protect myself, recuperate from this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you asked about glutathione. That's a kind of a big gun. Some people can't tolerate that. Quite a few of the sick, really sick people can't tolerate just going for the glutathione right away. Same thing with antifungals. They're a part of my protocol, but I wait till the very end which might be 2 weeks from the first time I saw them. It might be 8 weeks from the first time I saw them. You know, it's different for everybody, depending on what they came in the office with. But I've learned if you start there, I made people a lot sicker. We've seen in studies that if you try to kill mold, it will kick up its production of those mycotoxins to defend itself. And you don't want to do that inside.
No. I there's a lot of like, oh, you're just detoxing. You're just detoxing. And I'm like, there's a certain point when that level of stress on someone's system is not helping them.
Right. Like I say in my book, if it's too much, it's too much.
Yes. Yeah.
Like if it's not resolving in 2 to 3 days, whatever that is that you just did, I mean, any exercise program, you're going to be sore for a little bit too. Mm-hmm. I mean, the same kind of thing, but you can push your body to where you're actually causing damage. So we got to slow it down.
Yes. So the book is called Break the Mold, 5 Tools to Conquer Mold and Take Back Your Health. That is available, I assume, Amazon and most other spots.
And soon in bookstores.
Awesome.
That worked out.
That is awesome. And I want to make sure that everybody can find you as well, because you have a lot of great resources. And as you said, short videos, so they're really easily consumable. You can find Dr. Jill over at drkrista.com. And she's also on Facebook and Instagram. She's got a lot of great information over on Instagram. That's where I have mostly followed her. But her website, too, is an amazing resource. And I don't want to forget about moldquiz.com. Can you tell everyone what exactly is moldquiz.com?
Yeah. So this is a quiz I put out just because I think a lot of people then when they hear an interview with me or they hear a certain symptom, they're like, oh, I have that, you know? So like someone might be listening right now with eczema and think, I wonder if mold is the problem. So the quiz will tell you if there's a probability that it's mold or not based on symptoms. So it's just a short quiz. It's very, there are there's a lot of description. So if you want to learn, that's fine. But if you're just like wanting to get like take the quiz and get your results right away, you can do that too. But there's a lot of education there. And you get your results, and they're targeted results to show if it is mold, what kind of way are you being affected by mold that's individualized to your symptoms.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. And I hope that we can have you back and maybe dig into some more. I love that we made mold sexy today, and we talked about mold farts and all sorts. Sexy nerdy part. Things. I know. Nettles. I mean, we went in areas that I have never gone before, but I love it. And I really appreciate your willingness for sharing this kind of stuff so that people out there who are seeking answers and really can't seem to get much help, maybe this is a light bulb moment for them, or it's the motivation they needed to kind of get the ball rolling. But I really appreciate it, and I hope I can have you back sometime.
Thank you. Thank you. That was fun.
I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation so much with Dr. Krista. I look forward to having her back on the show. So stay tuned for that upcoming episode. In the meantime, for all of the resources and everything that we discussed within this episode, you can head on over to skinterrupt.com/166. There, you can also leave questions and comments so that way we can keep the conversation going. And if you know someone who you suspect may be exposed to mold, or they've got this weird histamine picture, and all of a sudden as you listen to this, you're like, oh, you know what? So-and-so needs to hear this. Make sure to share this episode with them, because how great is it that one little act of sharing information could change someone's entire life as well as their health? And if you haven't done so yet, make sure to head on over to your podcast platform of choice, rate, and review The Healthy Skin Show. Make sure to share what you love about the show, why you love tuning in every single week. And if you haven't done so yet, hit the subscribe button. That way, the next episode lands on your mobile device without you having to do a thing. That way, you don't miss any of the information, updates, and inspiration coming your way. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.